like this handout, maybe a little lengthy one, and I don't know exactly how much time we have, but we will try to cover, at least I will throw the seeds of these parts, you know, so that they germinate later on in your mind. As well as questions, I'm told that there is half an hour allotted to the questions, but in case any lady or gentleman here has a blazing question in their minds to such an extent they cannot rest, you know, and they cannot listen to the rest of it because that question has not been answered. So please feel free to ask that question, and I'll give you very brief answers, and then we'll go back, you know, in more detail to the greater, you know, the discussion. Okay, now there are points I will refer to. I want you all to be with me. We are traveling together. So when I say be with me, that means I'll be referring to the items here on the handout, and then we'll be talking. The time is short, so I'll be kind of rushing through, but we'll have later on time to speak in an obscure point. Now, point number one is, what is reincarnation concerned with? It is concerned with the afterlife. And what is afterlife? When we are no more in the bodily form, that is afterlife. Now, why should we discuss? I mean, you are all young people, you've got 70, 80, 90 years of life ahead of you in the physical body. So, why should we talk of afterlife? My answer to that is that we are building the afterlife today, now, at this moment. Afterlife is not something which is divorced from our present life. It is what we do here every day, what we think every day, how we feel every day, that has an impact, you know, on what is going to happen. Alright, now in terms of how, what is afterlife in the human race, there are two hypotheses. One is that life is a single event. You are born, you die, and that's the end of it. And your soul goes to either heaven or to hell, and remains there for how long? Nobody knows, until eternity. That is one hypothesis. This is called, we might call that the single life hypothesis. On the other hand, there is a competing hypothesis, and that is called multiple life hypothesis. Multiple life means you and I. We were on earth many times before today, and we will again come back to earth many, many more times until a particular stage is reached when we don't have to come back to earth. So this is, in brief, the multiple life hypothesis. Now, the next point is, what is it that reincarnates? Does everybody clear? Has everybody heard of the word reincarnation? Anybody who hasn't? I talked to somebody this morning about 10 o'clock, called me, an American young lady, and she said, I understand that you are giving a talk today, it's going to be webcast. I said, yes, that's true. She said, what is reincarnation? She asked me. And I was a little surprised because she's an educated woman. She is Jewish, but she's educated and she lives in Long Island. She said, can you understand me? I said, listen to me then at that time, and then we'll talk about it tomorrow. Okay, so everybody knows what is reincarnation. Re means again. Incarnate means to come into the flesh. Carnal means connected with flesh and with physical body. So reincarnation means that there is something that comes back and takes the form of the body, comes in the bodily form. Now, we all know that, everybody, this is a truism, that we have a body and we have a soul. Now, people say, I have a soul. Actually, that is not the best formulation. People should say, I am a soul and I have a body. Because soul is permanent and the body comes and goes. I might be having a body of Indian origin this time, but next time it might be African, or I might have been in Alaska, or might come back to China or wherever. So this body keeps on shifting. But whatever is inside the body, that does not change. That has got some entity, which is permanent. Now soul is regarded as something, many people of course believe in soul, but basically, without going into too much of the detail, basically soul you can say is 99% mind. Soul is basically mind. So what reincarnates is the mind. So the mind, you know, takes up the body and lives a certain number of years and acquires experiences. Those experiences are a permanent gain for the mind. They are not lost, not forgotten, because when we die, it doesn't mean that the mind vanishes. So the mind acquires those experiences and grows, you can see. Most of the time it grows, sometimes it can decline also temporarily, but on the whole the progress is upward. So we will be talking about this thing, the reincarnation of the mind. And the mind is the individual entity. What you and I and others are, we are basically minds. Minds means we have certain way of thinking, certain way of feeling, we have aspirations of a certain kind, we have talents of a certain kind, we have attitudes, we have predisposition. All those constitute the individual mind, and that is permanent. Now when the body leaves, when the mind of us left it, when we leave the body, that means when death takes place, people say, well, all right, death, so he cannot see and feel and hear. That is not true, ladies and gentlemen. It is not true, and we will touch upon that a little later. The mind is exactly after death, exactly the same as it was before the moment. Exactly. You have those organs also. They are called astral organs. Those are the real organs, the five senses. So when you talk of ghosts and stuff like that, can they see? Can a dead person see? The answer is yes. Can the dead person hear? The answer is yes. Smell, touch, feel? Yes. And that is what gives rise to the phenomenon of ghosts. We'll come to that again a little later. Okay, so point number two is that what is born, as I've said, physical rebirth of the mind. So the mind is born again and again and takes up the body, learns its lesson, sheds the body when it does not need the body anymore, when it is of no use. You've got tuberculosis, you've got AIDS, you have cancer, you say, all right, I cannot function anymore. Right? In the Gita, which is the holiest of holy books in Hinduism, there is a quote here, which is a very nice quote. Can we go back? I plan to go to it a little later, but we can do that right now. Go to this, I think this is page number one. Lord Krishna was a great philosopher. I mean, people say he was a kind of a god, but my views are slightly different. He was a great teacher, he was a great philosopher. And he says in a very beautiful way, look at the last three lines of this quote, Lord Krishna. Everybody got it? He says, the last three lines, nay, as when one layeth his worn out robes away, and taking new ones saith, these will I wear today. So what is death and rebirth? It is like the example, the analogy is that just as a person sheds the old worn clothes, sheds them and casts them away and takes up new clothing, the same way the mind or the soul takes up a new body, because the old body has completed its function and is needed no more. Okay, now point number three on the handout, please. Reincarnation in World Thought. The original title of the talk was The Doctrine of Reincarnation in World Religion. But then I later on thought, you see, that we can go beyond religion, as you will see. So we are expanding, you know, the original scope of the presentation. Now, here, what I did was there are hundreds and thousands of great minds of the world. who have believed in reincarnation for the past several centuries. But I picked up a few, and I tried to pick up more of the Western, you know, quotation. Why? Because here we are in the West. If we talk about the East or India and all that, people will think, oh, well, that is a backward country, and those people, they worship the cow and the caste system and all that kind of thing. What is the meaning of these things? And whatever they say is not that, cannot be so important. So I picked up some of the greatest minds of the West. Now let us look at Benjamin Franklin. Everybody knows, one of the fathers of this nation. He was a printer also. And look at the last two, and we don't have time to read word by word, but look at the last two lines. The last four or five lines. He says, Benjamin Franklin, ladies and gentlemen, the last five or six lines. But the work shall not be lost. By the work means whatever the mind, the progress of the mind. When death takes place, he says it will not be lost. For it will be, as he believed, appear once more. He says, my work, I will come back. In a new and more elegant edition, a revised edition, a revised and improved, you know. That is how we come back. Revised and corrected, this is wonderful. By who? Not by any god or any guru or any teacher, by the author. So what we do here is what we will get in the next year. But, all right. Now look at this slide one, Prime Minister David Lloyd George. Now here we are talking of going back to the First World War, 1914-1918. This gentleman was the Prime Minister of England. He was a Westerner at that time. Now today, there is so much of interaction between the Asian countries and this thing. But in 100 years ago or 90 years ago, things were totally different. People were living in kind of watertight compartments, mental, and they were, you know, things were not so well known. So this Prime Minister of England, at that time, England was the world's greatest power on earth, as you know. It said that the sun never set on the British Empire. They had 40, 50, 60 countries under their control at that time. Now the Prime Minister of that country says what? We shall be we shall be reincarnated, and that hereafter we shall suffer or benefit in accordance with what we have done in this world. So what is going to happen when we reincarnate? We take the results of what we are doing today, as I said. Afterlife may take 60, 80, 100 years. Now today, what we are doing, we are building or destroying that afterlife. And that is the importance of afterlife. Okay, that is the Prime Minister. All right, so you have heard of the names of Goethe, very famous German philosopher and poet, the author of Faust, and Nietzsche. Let us briefly go to Goethe. Goethe says, the first side, Goethe, a very great mind of the German, I am certain that I have been here, as I am now 1,000 times before. He says, just as I am here today, I have been here 1,000 times. Not once or twice. So this is what he says. Tolstoy. Who was Tolstoy? Anybody? Who was Tolstoy? Tolstoy, yeah.
The writer who wrote War and Peace.
War and Peace. A great classic of Russian language, a big novel, is War and Peace. And Tolstoy, one of the great thinkers and world figures of the turn of the century. He influenced Mahatma Gandhi, by the way, the great leader of India. Now Tolstoy says Russian. Now we have looked at Germans, we have looked at the Britishers, we have looked at American Benjamin Franklin. Now we are looking at a Russian. In the end, last two lines. The deeds of the preceding life give direction to the present life. So what he says I did in the past life gives me direction and gives a format for me to live the present life. This is what the Hindus call that. So this is Russian. Okay. Let's go to the back. Now Walt Whitman, regarded as the greatest poet of America, Walt Whitman. By the way, where I live, you know, in Long Island, Nassau County, there is a Walt Whitman house there. And I passed by that, so he did. Now, Walt Whitman, at the end, towards the end of his poem, the last two lines, round and round we go. All of us can ever come back thither. He says, with a cycle of birth and rebirth, and we come back. Okay, Jesus Christ, Henry Ford, look at all the people. Henry Ford is an arch materialist who invented the car and he put millions of billions of cars on the road. Now what Henry Ford said, I mean he's the last person to think of spirituality. I mean you won't imagine that Henry Ford had time to think of beyond building cars. Henry Ford says, I believe that we are here now and will come back again. Very clear statement. I mean, there's no ambiguity. Okay. Now look at here, Khalil Gibran. He is regarded as a very great poet. He was of Lebanese origin. And his book, little book, The Prophet, is an all-time classic. Khalil Gibran says, forget not that I shall come back to you. He said, don't have any doubts. I am going to be back. And very beautifully said, a little while, he says, it will take a little while, and when I leave this body, it won't be the next day or the next hour, it will be a little while, a moment of rest upon the wind. Upon the wind means in the super world. And then what he says, and another woman shall bear me. I'll be in the womb of another woman. I'll have another mother and I'll be born. Okay. Now talking of the Far East. Pardon? For my feather?
No,
I should not talk so excited.
It's a good part.
The whole world is seeing how clumsy I am. Okay. Let us, what was that? Yes. The rebirth of Katsugoro. Now this is Japan now, we are in Far East territory. This is a story of a 6-year-old boy whose name was Katsugoro. He said, you see, when he was 5 or 6 years old, he said, this is not my house, you know, I lived there in that village over there, 100 miles, 50 miles away. And he described that was my father, that was my mom, and this was how it was, the household. They listened to him for, this is a child, you know, his fancies, imagination, he fantasized. But then when he was settled, they say, all right, let's take him over there. They took him over there, and he said, everybody stay back. He led the way. He said, make a left turn, make a right turn, stop here. And the house is like that, and these are so many rooms there, and so many, all that. Now, this was what happened in Japan. And we will talk a little later about, you know, what else that is done. Okay, back to the handout. So we have talked about the world thinkers. This is the first bullet on item number 3, the world thinkers. Indic tradition. Indic tradition means tradition which originated in India. That is Hinduism, and there are smaller ones, Jainism and Sikhism. Sikhs are those people with beards and dirt on their skin. Okay, they all strongly believe in reincarnation. In fact, reincarnation is so unnoticed because it is fed with the mother's milk. And in ordinary language, you see, I mean, people, they use this. Okay, what can you do about it, say, question of past life, you must have done something wrong, and now you are eating the fruit of that, or must have something done something great, and you are enjoying the benefits. So, all the Indic tradition, Buddhism is also an Indic tradition because it originated in India, but I have put it over there because in India there is not a large number of Buddhists anymore, and Buddhism has spread to the Far East, the Japan, Korea, China, and other places. Now the Semitic tradition. The Semitic traditions are those which originated in the Middle East. They are Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Now in Judaism, there is a, let me submit here, that the original teachings are very much different, many times, but often, they are very much different from the current tradition. What the prophets have said, it is not followed, but it has been kind of reinterpreted 100 times, and people have done that according to their own needs, their desires, or their tendencies and temperaments. What is Christianity? The established Christianity today is not, in my opinion, what Christ taught. The Christianity of today was taught by St. Paul. And it is St. Pauline Christianity. And what was that? Christ said so many things. St. Paul said, simple. Believe in Christ and you will get the divine eternal life. So if there are two murderers who come murdered somebody, and they are both injured with the police shooter, and they are on hospital beds now. If one of them says, I believe in Jesus, his salvation is sure. The other says, nothing, he is going to hell. Now, do you think there is any logic in that? That 5 minutes before you die, you say, I believe in Jesus, and then you see all your sins are the one. It doesn't seem logical. I mean, this is not the kind of universe, you know, it doesn't make any sense. So, but Christianity did believe in the incarnation, and there are many saints, but then they tampered with the original Bible, and in the convention of Constantinople in the 5th century, they, discarded the notion of reincarnation. Why? Because the notion of reincarnation depends upon effort of the self. If you want to grow and progress and evolve, you have to put in effort yourself. So they didn't like that. They said, we believe in Christ and Christ is the savior of everybody. And all that you have to do is to say, I believe in Christ. And then everything is on the origin. Now that kind of thing, in my opinion, with all respect to the Christian members of the body. Okay, so the Semitic tradition, Kabbalah, is the Jewish mystic tradition. And Kabbalah people, I took a course in Kabbalah just to understand what is Judaism. And I found that they were all the time talking of reincarnation. So in Christianity Bible, there is a very famous thing. Quotation from Jesus. There was a fellow called Elijah in the Jewish Bible, that means the Old Testament. Now it was the prophets in the Old Testament said that Elijah is going to come back. So when Christ was there, there was this fellow Saint John the Baptist, and people thought that Christ was Elijah come back. But Christ says, no, it is Saint John the Baptist who is the rebirth, who is Elijah reborn. I mean, this is officially in the Bible, and there are other something that I can also. So the Bible, there are hints of reincarnation hypothesis in the Bible. Then there is the Quran, and the Quran is the most difficult, you know, to interpret, but there is a quotation from the Quran here. It says Surah. Surah means chapter number 2, verse number 28. And it says, last 3 lines, and you were dead. He brought you back to life. He means God. And he shall cause you to die, you will die again. And shall bring you back to life again. That means that once you were dead, he brought you back to life, you are going to die again. And you will take that means again, as I said, that multiple lives, that person is born again and again. Okay, now Buddhist, Far East religions and systems, Buddhism is very prominent, and Buddha talks of Nirvana. What is Nirvana? That soul is born again and again, and ultimately there comes a time when the soul has perfected itself and it doesn't have to come back. That means it has graduated. So when you are graduated, you pass the final, you got your diploma, you don't have to go back. It's like an exam. Alright, now we are at number 4. What is the evidence for reincarnation for the modern man? It is not that, okay, somebody said that, you believe it. That is not enough for the modern man or woman. So the evidence is the following. Nature versus nurture. Now there is an everlasting debate. What is more important, genetics or environment? The environment, now obviously, environment counts for very little. Why? There are prodigies. Mozart, the great composer, he wrote musical set at 4 or 5 years age. There is a girl, that I read in the New York Times a few days back, a Palestinian girl, age 13, whose parents migrated to Italy. And there she wrote a book on the Palestine situation. 13-year-old girl. And she wrote a book, and that book became bestseller. It was only about 2 or 3 weeks ago in the New York Times. Now, do you think, you see, that was because of the environment? No. It is the inner merit. It is the inner talent. And that inner talent has been acquired over a number of successive lives. This fellow, Tiger Woods. You think, you know, I mean, at the age of 18, 19, he became a world champion. Why don't you and I become world champions at being 28 or 38? You cannot. It is because the muscular skills and the muscular coordination, not that in the previous life was a qualifier, but you see, whatever he was doing, you see, his muscular coordination and things, that is carried over to it. See, that no effort ever goes waste. Nothing. Every single thought and every little thing that you have done is impeccable in delivering, etched into your mind, and it is nothing can destroy it. Even after 10,000 years, whenever there is an opportunity, it will blossom. Okay, so prodigies, those who are extraordinarily talented, those people, I mean, there is no rational explanation except that their minds have been trained in that particular sphere and they are now specimens. Different inner capacities in common environment. Everybody knows that we have children, right? One child shines and becomes this, and the other turns out to be a bum. On drugs, chasing girls, and his brother is doing his doctorate over there, and he is doing nothing at all. Same environment, same genes, same house, same food, same room, same bathroom, everything, same. So that is more explicable on the basis of this inner differences, which are brought over from the previous life. Now, past life recall. Past life recall means, that is Karcha Guru. That means children, young children, sometimes can recall. Not all the time. Because the scheme, nature scheme, demands that you forget the past life. Why? Because if the past life is too much in your mind, you cannot function in the present. So the nature obliterates the past life by the age of 3, 4, or 5. Then you see the impressions of the present life they are superimposed over the past life impression and ultimately you live in the past life. But there are rare cases where the past life impression continues and they also support that this particular mind or this particular child had lived before and remembers his past life experience. Next, life's unexplained rewards and punishments. Somebody wins the lottery, you say, oh, he's lucky. There is no such thing as luck. You have deserved whatever you get. Your family is in the car and everybody perished in an accident. There is a reason behind that. And that reason goes beyond the present, narrow, visible condition. Because the invisible world is like a million times larger than the visible world. You see, if we look at the light, the spectrum of light is from here to there, but our eyes can see only this one. Similarly, the sound, the spectrum is as wide, but you can only hear a certain degree of range of decibels. Below that, our ear is incapable, above that, incapable. Similarly, so if everybody says, show me the reading card, show me your mind, show me your soul, it's just cannot. If somebody says, show me electricity, all right, just the light boy, and you will know, show me gravity, all right, jump from the window and do that. NDEs, the next point, we are in item number four. NDEs are near-death experience. There are people like Raymond Moody, a psychiatrist and an MD, and there are people like Betty Eddy. They have documented that when a person dies, then you see, after death, they come back to life. They come back to life because of the modern medical technology. Formerly, when a person was dead. Now, when a person is dead, he may not be really dead. So he's dead for 5, 10, 15 minutes, but they put the mask and they drop the heart and they put respiration and all that on the left. During those 10, 15 minutes, they have experience. That means that their senses were not dead. They've heard something. People say, okay, when they pronounce me dead, I was there at the ceiling. And I was looking back at my dead body over in the hospital. And the doctors were talking and nurses were saying this thing. They hear everything. Now these are documented, I mean these are written by Western scientific minds, you know, like MDs. They are not written by credulous people who believe in all kinds of nonsense. Okay, Western revelation. Now in the Western world, there has been one of the greatest psychics of the world. Who is a psychic? A psychic is a person who transcends the five senses and gets knowledge directly from the invisible reality, psychic. Edgar Casey, if you go to West Virginia, the city, over there is an institute there. I have been there once or twice. And Edgar Casey, he died in 1945, which is not that bad, too far back. And he diagnosed the illnesses of 2,500 people on the basis of what the past connection was. He said, you were like that, and that has been carried over, and that is why you are dead. And those are documented, because 1945 is not that bad. If you go there is a museum, and there are all American people who are well-educated, those people. Then Theosophical Society. Theosophy is a movement which was started in 1875 in New York City. And a couple of streets away, they had an office there, 42nd Street, I believe. It's one or two streets away, it's very close. They have their weekly meeting, and they will talk of reincarnation, and there are a lot of books there, and there are lectures there. If you are kind of non-believers, go and attend their lectures, not too far from this place. And so in the Western systems of thought, people like Edgar Casey made 14,000 predictions, and they are all recorded, and they have been, many of them have been verified. Okay. Modern research, Dr. I.N. Stevenson, he has written a book called 30 Cases Suggested of Reincarnation. So he studied 30 children who were able to recall, and he wrote down that book. Then Dr. Brian Weiss, there are MDs, all these people, they are not credulous, superstitious kind of people, and illogical kind of people. Brian Weiss's book is Many Masters, Many Lives. There he described, you see, he had never heard of reincarnation, but he was a hypnotist. He was trying to cure a patient, and the patient said, I'm in 18th century. He was stunned, he said. Okay, so he carried out, further research and other sessions and all that. And as a result, he wrote that book. And when it was discovered what was the cause of the neurosis, the patient was cured. Because you could reach the very bottom, not in the present life, which is the Freudian hypothesis, but the life before, with the reincarnation hypothesis. Okay, number five now. A reincarnation as part of a cosmic pattern. Now if you say, why reincarnation, why should the soul? Ladies and gentlemen, the answer is, everything reincarnates. This is the fundamental principle. The sun reincarnates every morning. The spring and the winter reincarnate every year. The flowers reincarnate every year. The waves reincarnate. The tides reincarnate. Because the principle of cyclicity is inherent in the universal cosmic structure. So don't think that this is something totally unrelated. Okay, the next subheading under number five is spiral resurgence. So what is meant by spiral resurgence? It means it is like a spiral spring. Okay, this, let's say this is the east side and this is the west side. It goes on like that, the spiral. Okay, now it is east and then it goes to west, comes back to east. But when it comes back to east in the spiral form, it is not exactly the same point. It is a notch higher. So when things come back, they come back in broad pattern, but they do not come back in minute detail. The minute details are different. And generally what happens is that the process is generally a progress. So spiral, so things are cyclical in nature, but the recurrence of a particular spot on the cycle is not exactly the same, but a little higher. So this is exactly what happens in reincarnation. Okay. Now we cannot understand reincarnation until we understand the doctrine of karma. And in fact, karma and reincarnation are like twins. And they are like those twins which are inseparable. You cannot separate them. What is the doctrine of karma? Karma means the law of cause and effect. You do one thing, you jump from the window, you break your knees. All right? You smoke for 40 years and you will get cancer. Right? You shoot yourself in the head and you will see. No problem. This is the cause and effect. Those are physical laws. But the law of cause and effect works in the moral realm also, in the ethical world. That means, if I do good to you, the good will come back to me. Not now, not this moment. Some form, not from him. From, I do good to him, he does good to me. But the good will come back. I hurt somebody, that hurt will come back. This is the cause and effect in the moral realm. It is also called the like begets like. Like begets like means if you do good, good will come back. Each after its kind. These are the different phraseologies about the law of God. What we saw reading in every religious tradition, it is said that whatever you do, you have your responsibility for that. Good deeds will come back to you, will be rewarded. Bad deeds will be punished. I think there is no controversy about that. of the nature of karma. Number seven, karma is not physical action, although it leads to physical action. But karma is basically psychological domain. It is intention. You can do the same physical action with different intention. There is a knife and you give it to the surgeon and he takes out your tumor. And you give the same knife to a mugger and he robs you. So it is not the knife. It is the intention or the behind that. You can do the same act with the totally divergent and contradictory intention. Somebody asks you something, you are quiet. Now that quiet may be to help the other person. It may be to show your superiority, you don't care what he is talking about. So, I mean, just being quiet in a very simple example does not mean anything. It depends on what is your good intention in not answering that question. It could be good or bad or different. Okay, next one under this, the bullet is Akashic Records. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you will say, where is the record? I mean, who takes care of what you have been thinking and doing? The answer is, the universe takes care of it. Akashic is a Sanskrit word, it means the space. Every thought, every feeling, is recorded for all eternity, for the next trillion, trillion, billion years, forever, it is recorded. And there are people who have access to those records, and those are the saints. Advocacy was one. Now, on advocacy, 200 books have been written. Go to a library and, you know, check up. It's worth fun. It's worth the out of the universe. So Akashic Records is the universal a kind of a registry where everything is recorded, and it is possible if you are advanced enough spiritually, then you can have access. Now karma is not punitive. Now if you say, all right, you have done something wrong, you should be punished. The law of karma, it does punish, but the idea is not to punish. It's like a loving mother. The idea is to correct. The loving mother might slap a child, might rebuke a child, but the idea is not to crush the personality of the child. The idea is to correct, you know, the behavior of the child. So the function of karma is to educate. Some, it is up to us, you know, how we want to be educated. If we are intelligent, then we can take hints and start doing the right thing. If we are not intelligent, we want to be beaten a number of times so that the sense is instilled into our heads. I mean, you say, you're stupid. How many times have I told you? You say, Lord, but it is not their intention to do that. No cosmic accountancy. That means also this is the point. Supposing you have hurt somebody 200 times, I mean, not somebody but all the people 200 times. Does it mean that you will be hurt 200 times? The answer is no. If you stop hurting, all the 200 hurts that you have caused will be what? Because the idea is to stop your mentality of hurting. So the idea is to make you realize that hurting others is not good. So if you have learned that lesson, you don't have to pay for every wrong thing that you have done. Because it's not, you know, like a mentality or like you owe me 10 cents here, 5 here, you go to this, you go to 9.75, you pay me every. No. They want to change you, the Lord of Karma, they want to change you, to educate you, to make you a better human being. If you have learned the lesson, everything else is wonderful. Okay, no personal debt for that. If I have hurt a particular person, it is not, karma doesn't say that particular person will hit me. I will be hit, but that hit may come from somebody else. So it is not like you did that and I will do that. It is not that. So this is a nice phrase. The next one, meeting self. Meeting self means whatever happens to you, nobody is doing it. you are doing it to yourself. It is like standing before a mirror and you see yourself. You have a tragedy, that is what you created. You have a great bonanza, you created it yourself. When did you create that? Maybe earlier in this life. Now those people, the snipers, you know, the two people, the little one, 17 years old, the other one, who killed 10 people. Okay, I mean now they are in jail and they are, so why are they in jail? I mean they did that and they were caught. But everybody is not caught during the same life. Sometimes you will be caught in the next life or the one after that. It is said that the karmic results can be carried over to 5 or 6 future lives. 5 or 6, not 100, 5 or 6 future lives. This is what I have heard. Okay, the goal next one is the reorientation of attitudes. As we have already mentioned, that the karma is there to educate you, to make you a better human being. How do you become a better human being? Purity of thought. What is in your mind? No cheating on the IRS return. 15th of April is coming. Remember that. Okay? If you were late, you know, just because you were sleeping, don't come and say, oh, the traffic jam was so much over there, you see. If there was a disabled car, there was no such disabled car. You just didn't get a point. So, purity of thought and compassion for them. Compassion. Be kind. Forgive people's mistake. Everybody makes mistakes. We make. If you count your mistakes and one day do this practice, write down, take a pencil and paper, every time you make a mistake, write down. You will be making 10-20 mistakes every day, little and big. If you do not forgive, the Heavenly Father will not forgive you. That is karma. That means that you can't say that, all right, I'll go and do the wrong thing, and then I expect that all those will be forgiven by the Lord. That is not possible. Okay, very important. Next point. In karma, there are two strands. Am I talking too much? How much time is left? Okay.
Just that.
Okay. All right, I'll try to speak up. Okay. Very, very important point, ladies and gentlemen. There are two strands in karma. Continuity and correction. Continuity means the good things are maintained, retained, and carried forward. So if you practice singing 20 years, you practice, you cultivated your voice, in the next birth, you will be born with a beautiful, sonorous voice. Continuity, it will not be lost. That is the principle. No effort going waste, as we said. So, and after that, the second principle is correction. Correction means if you are doing wrong things, then you will experience the results of wrongdoing, which will be suffering. And the idea of suffering is not to punish you, but to make you realize that you haven't done wrong. So, if there is a teacher and there is this person, student has submitted a third class paper, the teacher gives an F. Why does the teacher give an F? It is not to punish, it says, okay, come back, redo it, come back. So, that kind of thing, the idea is to correct. So, the good thing that we do remains with us. And the wrong things that we do have to be corrected by us. Nobody else can correct. There are some teachers who say, oh, believe in me, I will give you salvation. In my opinion, that is sheer nonsense. Nobody can step into the mind and choose anybody. Everybody has to seek salvation for themselves. Okay, correction. Now we are in the second column. Correction, infinite chances given. Now, you see, this earth school that we are now living, this is a regarded as a school. And our minds have come over, taken over, you know, enrolled in the school. And if we fail, can we drop out? Or I don't want to go to school. Sorry, you have to come back next. And one after that, maybe 29, maybe 10. You have to come back. You cannot drop out. So nature is so beneficent that nature gives you chance after chance after chance. to correct yourself. And you can either correct it in the way of wisdom, or you can connect it by prolonged suffering. But you will be correct sooner or later. So, good luck to us. The law of grace. The law of grace says, I think let's skip that in a moment. Okay, kinds of karma. There are three kinds of karma. One is which is in operation. That means we are reaping the fruits, good or bad, of the past deeds of our earlier life here or previous life. This is here. We have no control over that. We have to undergo that. That is the karma in operation. Then the karma in abeyance, karma which is in cold storage. Because you have, we have, everybody has done hundreds of wrong things. Now they are not to be corrected in one single life. So in this life we are correcting 2, 3, 4, or 5 big things. For example, if one person may be prone to bouts of anger, the other person may be prone to intoxication, alcohol abuse, the third may have a propensity towards crime. So 2, 3, 4 things can be handled. Now what about the other wrong things? They are in cold storage, but they can never be forgotten. So in the next life or the one after that, when the circumstances are propitious and right and favorable, that karma will generate. It's a sentence. And the last one under number 9 is in process. We are not only receiving the effects of karma all the time, we are building karma also all the time. So karma in the making. So I'm sitting here. If I say, okay, these people in front of me, they're good or something, I'm a scholar after this incarnation, I'm already committing bad karma. If on the other hand, if I say, you know what happened? I am committing and you also are committing karma at this very scale. There is no second, split second, no nanosecond in life where we are not committing karma, either by thought or by word or by deed. If on the other hand I say, okay, God has blessed me, I have studied this topic a little, thought about it, and here I am sharing it with my brother and sister or music and nephews or grandchildren. So, I mean, I am doing the same thing, but it's the intention, as I said. So I am building karma, and so I do. The role of reincarnation in karma. Reincarnation extends the time frame for the operation of karma. What is the meaning of extension of time frame? I mean, supposing there is a disease, and you, as these diseases take 10 years, 20 years, you know, to build up. So there is a 20-year hiatus between your exposure to TB infection and the appearance of TB in the third degree, TB is still at work. Okay, then in the same manner, we have our action and our deeds at the ethical level, on the moral plane. Those which are committed earlier, in one life, there is not time enough, you know, to reap the benefits and to also reap the punishment. So it gives you more time, you know, to receive the benefits or the suffering of, you know, what you have done. So instead of one life, you have a large number of lives. Learning is a slow process. Karma gives you a lot of time. Because learning, as we know, you know, I mean, learning is not easy. Learning is extremely slow. All right, the next point is cumulative progress based on previous achievement. We have touched on that already. That the effort put in the previous lives is not wasted, but it is there very much, every little bit of it. Every bit of it is stored there in Akashic records and is a part of your permanent personality. Okay, oneness. Number 10 now. 11. Oneness is the, this is the ultimate. I mean, it does not necessarily, we don't have necessarily to rise to that level, but the highest levels of philosophy that man has conceived of, created, is the law of one. All existence is one. Everything is interconnected. All human beings are interconnected. And all the animal kingdom, the vegetable kingdom, and the mineral kingdom, and the protoplast kingdom, all these are interconnected. Why? Because from the Big Bang, what happened? There was nothing. And then everything came into existence. So if something issues from zero, that means that in expansion there, but they're all kins. They're kith and kin of each other. There is a small story I mentioned, probably it is in the Bible. A woman died, and she had a 9-year-old daughter. The funeral is going, and the dead body is being taken away, and this girl, 9-year-old, is following the dead body of her mother. The 9-year-old girl sees a wounded bird on the side. She leaves that, and she picks up the bird, and she caresses the bird, and she holds it to her bosom. People say, your mother is dead, what are you doing? The girl looked at a very highly evolved soul, I would say. He said, my mother is not dead. This is something that my mother discarded. He had no use of this. This body of my mother was once my mother, but now it is dead flesh. And it is, I cannot help. This bird is living and it suffers. He said, I can relieve the suffering of this bird. This is, the girl says, my mother told me that also. Feel, think, it was all created. Now this is a 9-year-old girl, same voice then. So oneness means that, we have given examples, they should feel that we are all connected. And the difference at the human level, difference of race and color and of language and of religion and faith, they really don't mean anything. And that if you scratch the surface, people have the same desire, same aspiration, same feelings, same everything. And the differences are very interesting. And they underline oneness. And beyond that is the oneness of all existence. But that is sometimes too absent to ponder, but it's there. Okay, cosmology, I don't think I should go into. All right, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, very much. And now I am open to cross-examination. There is a little kind of, a special kind of drink which Tom offered me. And I said, if I take that drink, then I won't know what I was talking about. Now I'm ready.
The question is, what is the form of the question?
All right, to your better understanding and knowledge of the intellectual theory.
Any questions?
Inherent cruelty. Essentially, the whole idea seems to be ultimately to dismiss incarnation, to return to the One.
Yes.
Most discussions of reincarnation and karma focus on staying in the body, constantly coming back, rather than that dismissal. How do we get past the reincarnation back to the dismissal of the body?
I think I touched on it briefly when I said that you need to develop purity of thought and you need to develop compassion and truth, non-violence and things like that, and sense of kinship. When we do that and when we achieve those things to a certain degree, then the mind or the soul will have no need to come back.
And what
it does not say that, okay, don't do good things and keep coming back. No, it says, understand why we come back. And if you remove the causes of your return, then you'll be home free. So, it's a concept I mentioned, nirvana, you know. And in Christianity, salvation, the divine kingdom. So they all say, when you'll be one with the divinity, the universal spirit. Is that reasonably acceptable?
You seem more committed to a rather Buddhist version of that doctrine.
I strongly am committed to what I said, and that is, let me repeat what I said. The essence of it all is that we cannot drop out of this school, earth school, which is a school of spiritual growth. We cannot drop out. We have to complete the courses, and we might come back 20 times or 100 times, but we have to complete the course. After the completion of the course, what's going to happen? You don't have to come back. Which means you merge with the energy. Okay. Yes?
Can you talk a little bit about this misuse of free will? That was a personal ego.
I'm sorry. Which one?
Number 12, you didn't go into cosmology.
No. Want me to briefly? I think I...
On this misuse of free will?
Yeah. Okay, let me take a couple of minutes. Cosmology, I mean, we are talking of why was the universe created. According to Hindu scripture, and now modern science, cosmic science, is also giving some hints to this, that the universe expands and then contracts. And then there is a period when there is nothing. And then again it expands, and this goes on infinitely. Now modern science, there is the approach of experimentation, hypothesization and testing and so on. They believe in the five senses. But the great seers and sages, they may be like the Rumi, you know, from Arab, or saints of Hindu India, and other Christian mystics, they say that they say the same thing. They say that the universe occurs, the existence of the universe takes place in cycles. It comes into existence for a very, very long time, and then it goes out of existence. It says, I mean, the metaphor used is that the holy breath goes forth and then withdraws into itself. When it goes forth, the universe is activated. And when it withdraws, everything comes to an end. But remember what I said, cyclical spiral resurgence. The next time, when the holy breath, this is a metaphor, when the holy breath goes forth again, that means creation occurs, it takes into account the previous growth which has taken place. So it is an endless process. Nobody knows when it began, nobody knows it will end, when it will end. So the absolute, that is the absolute. The absolute is that power which expresses itself, manifests itself, and then withdraws and takes back the manifestation. Okay, the soul is created, given, all that. Now this is maybe a good point. Now souls were created at one time. And God gave the soul three qualities. One is the spirit, S with a capital S. Spirit is the same attribute which the absolute has. That means the divinity has that attribute. So there is a small part, as they say, that the God resides in our hearts. So that little dot and that little part, grain of sand, that is spirit. Then God gave the individual soul the mind. Mind is the capacity to think and build. All the universe that we see, this table, is basically nothing but congealed, solidified thought. Because when Big Bang happened 18 billion years ago, what was there? There was nothing, there was some thought. And then that created, you know, created all the galaxies and the stars, solar system, vegetation, the animal kingdom, everything. So, and looking, talking about the human mind, the human mind is then given the mind, and then the most important thing that is given to the human soul is the power of will. Will means to choose. And the differences between all of us are differences because of the exercise of will, a difference. So you exercise your will in one way and I do it another, and that creates, you know, the difference between us. So souls created and given individual minds and free will. So free will is an integral part. So when we do good karma, we are choosing free will in a manner which is in harmony with the basic principles of the universe. When we do bad deeds, we use our free will in order in discord with the universal scheme of things. Okay, the law of one we have talked about. The law of one is the law of harmony and love. Okay, it's quite understandable. You see, if one reality was manifested and diversified into a million or a billion things, now how are they going to live together? Yeah, instead of the harmony. It's obvious. You have children at home, right? You have three children. I mean, how should they live? They must live in harmony in order to have peace and in order to make life worthwhile. So discord is against the law of nature. And harmony and love are in accord with the law of nature. Okay, so what happened was, why do we have to come back? I'm going through that gentleman's question. Why did we have to come to Earth in the first place? Because we misused our free will. We misused in our free will and our lesser ego developed. Lesser ego means I am better than you. This sense developed. And this is the cause of all trouble. That I am superior to you, I am better than you, and therefore you have to be subservient to me and so on. So that is what is the birth of separative and personal ego. Return path provided, going back to that gentleman's question again. So karma and reincarnation provide the path to return to the source where it is. Yes.
You mentioned something about astral organs that is somewhat confusing me. You said, I probably didn't get it. You said astral organs survive death, and therefore are the reason, they're crucial for the physical rebirth. Without the astral organs, the physical rebirth cannot happen. So they're tied to these empirical senses that seeing, hearing, touch, taste, smell, equilibrium. But, so then you're saying that the empirical and transcendent, they're coexistent, they're not distinct. But the problem that I'm having with that is that when oneness is achieved, doesn't the soul therefore also die? Because, the whole purpose of oneness is to deny these empirical senses. So therefore the astral organs become superfluous, they're no longer needed.
Okay. All right. Good question. No, it's quite all right. I mean, it's good to be confused. Because that means you are thinking. I mean, if you ask no question, that means you never heard anything. And your mind is work. All right. There are, our body has seven sheets, seven. One inside the other. The physical one is the seventh. Behind the physical one is the astral. Now, astral is called linga sharira, this is the Sanskrit term. It is the design body. designed body. First, the astral body imprint, when the baby is being developed in the womb, his astral body, the baby's astral body is developing at that time. And the astral body has the five sense organs. And then you see the astral body is a kind of a mold around which, you know, you put clay or whatever, and then it takes shape. So that the second inner body is the astral body. Then the third inner body is what's called in Sanskrit, forget that. It is the desire body, your desires. The fourth body is the prana, it is called the life. What is called life? Life is life is not something I am living and you are living. Life is a general principle. And even when I die, life doesn't die. Life is a pervasive thing which pervades the entire space and entire universe. And then comes, you see, the mind body. And then there is a sixth body. In a sixth body is called the body of discriminative thought that decides between right and wrong and good and bad. And the innermost body is the spiritual self. Okay. Now, when the physical body dies, the astral body is totally intact for the time being. It has all the five senses. That is why the dead people can communicate. You see, there is this phenomenon of what is that called? When people, there are mediums, you know, mediums, they communicate with dead. They are all not fake. Some of them are fake. Some of them are just the charlatan. But not everybody. And this Edgar Casey, he was able to communicate, you know. And there are other saints and seers in all faiths who have the ability to do that. Okay, so after that, then there comes a time when the astral body also dies. After the physical body. First physical body dies, the astral body lives for a number of years. It dies. The desire body then also dies. But remember this thing. The essence of your desires are called in Sanskrit skandhas. They are in Buddhist literature also. There are five categories of those essences. They are kind of summary form of all what you did in this life. Then your mind goes into another world which is called the abode of gods. It is the thought body. Thought body. When you are in the thought body, there is no suffering. Because you have left the desires behind. It is the desires which cause suffering. Thoughts don't cause suffering. So, in the thought body, you enjoy the entire world's thought system in open, because you are a thought yourself. So you don't have to have mind or brain in order to understand. So there people live sometimes hundreds of years, thousands of years. And when your good karma has lost it there, then you come back. Now remember the skandhas, the five categories, they are waiting for you to come back. And when you come back into the physical body, they catch you. They say, okay, buddy, come. This is what you are. We'll start all over again. Where is that? No, I don't understand. I'm not too sure whether I answered the question. Please go ahead and summarize it once again.
Well, there are a lot of things that you said that make me want to revise my question. But my original question was that...
You can ask your question in one sentence.
Okay. When... So the whole purpose of oneness is not just this kind of end of the physical plane, but it's also the end of the astral plane.
Absolutely. All things, even the mind will come to an end. Yes. Because mind is individual. Again, your individuality will cease. And your individuality will merge into the universality. So there will be no John, and there will be no Mary, and no Jane. Yes, ma'am.
You talked about
souls being created.
Oh, you.
Okay. Souls being created, and I always think about population, how much it has grown. Does that mean that souls are constantly being created, or are we split off?
No.
Or?
The souls that you find on the earth plane, that means on this earth, is maybe 1% or even less of the total number of souls which are hovering in the other planes. So the souls are waiting for the circumstances to be propitious for them to learn their lessons. So it is not that there are new souls being created. In this present, it is said that in the present solar system, the number of souls created already is limited, and no more souls are being added. So, look here. Say, 2,000 years or 5,000 years ago, the world was not able to produce food enough for enough people. But when agriculture came, and irrigation came, and fertilizers came, then you see, more food was available. It could sustain a larger number of bodies. So those souls who were waiting all the time, they found that the earth now has a larger capacity. Okay. Yes, Sophia, yes. Okay, you.
Souls should learn their lessons through many lives. But at the same time, the individual minds are different previews. So the thing about the extreme case is an individual exercises a preview and never learn, then what happens? That means the person will be coming all the time and always. I never visualize each other very common. I stay here all the time.
Okay, we should teach them about that. Will somebody repeat what you said? If you phrase your question without explanation or background, it will help.
The direction of a soul is to educate, to get education.
Right, absolutely, yes.
At the same time, an individual mind is given free will, right? So I'm free to decide whether I want to do good things or bad things, whether to propagate good karma.
You see, the soul and mind are the same for our practical purposes.
Uh-huh.
It is not that soul is different from the mind.
I know.
As I said, soul is mind.
My question hasn't finished. I'll try to make one sentence.
Okay.
This is karma. And then, now what if a person could go through many lives, exercising the free will,
yes,
but do not learn.
Yes.
Then does the person go on and on through many life forever?
As I said again, two or three times, you cannot drop out.
You cannot drop out.
No.
But
you will go on suffering.
Life, the person will get, although it's not primitive, but get bad consequences.
Yes.
Get run down by a car or get
murdered.
But we're definitely, so stay on.
Yes. You see, there are two ways of learning. One is the way of wisdom, and the other is the way of suffering. What is the way of wisdom? Open your mind. Listen to what the philosophers, the saints and sages, the holy men have said. The holy men have said, all right, lead a good godly life. What is godly life? Be truthful, be honest, don't cheat people, don't be selfish. These thoughts are not new. But if we do not learn them from what people have said, and we do go on doing wrong things, then we will invite suffering. And one minute. But there will come a time when the suffering is so great that you will say, oh, well, I better stop doing this.
So what you're saying that everybody is preview is the preview of how many lives I need to learn. Eventually, suffering is so big that my preview will say, okay, I give up.
Absolutely. You will say, I'm defeated.
So, may I ask the second half of my question?
Yeah, sure.
Suppose on the other hand, I'm so good now, I exercise my preview to only do good.
Okay.
for many, many lives.
Yeah.
Then why go on to get all the good consequence of being good? Or why eventually doesn't mean, as the gentleman said, if I understand correctly, that I just get out of the system because I'm united with the oneness?
You are required to pass a course and get a passing grade. Once you have attained that stage, you don't need to go to school anymore.
So
with going to school means being born in this metaphor.
So
being
this born is not the best thing. The best thing is to get out of school and to be with the universe. Or
it is inevitable.
You're a doctor.
I mean, this kind of the typical teenager, the thing, oh, this is my life, I want to do this, and this is me, and nobody can interfere, that kind of nonsense.
So at certain stage, would I feel bored? Like if I'm in school 20 years, I will get bored, I don't like to be in this world anymore.
Whether you are bored or not bored doesn't matter. You cannot drop out. There is no place to go, and you are stuck with it. You can go and challenge God, what kind of universe you have made? He says, I have made what I made. Yes, she has been raising her hand. Yes.
My question is, why in Vedic religion, the concept of karma and reincarnation is the central concept? Why in Indian religion only the concept of karma and reincarnation is central? Sociologically speaking, why not in other Semitic religions?
First of all, I am not a sociologist. So my answer may not satisfy you, but I'll give you a common sense answer. The Semitic religions arose in lands which are desert lands. Said, the Indic traditions arose in the land of Ganges, the North Indian plains. Maybe that because the land was fertile and the climate was salubrious, and they had less need to devote their energies to survival, physical survival, and therefore they had spare mental capacity to ponder over these things. Yeah, I mean, I don't know why.
No, you
know.
Very good. I just want to make one comment.
Yes.
To everyone who... Okay, and that is, that if you really... I'm a non-religious person, by the way.
Yes.
And not an analogy, like a very good friend of mine. But I don't believe. But I think that if really we believe in this philosophy of that good deeds would do good to you, right? We can improve a lot.
Let's
think about that.
Yes.
Okay. Doesn't your theory sound a little pretty
animalistic? Sound what?
Very pretty animalistic.
Convincing?
Yeah. Well, convincing, of course, but at the same time, it always sounds extremely pretty animalistic.
Determinism. Yeah. Okay. No, it is convincing on the one hand.
Yeah.
And on the other, what is it?
It is not a part of this in the
determinist.
I have said 20 times
that free will is an attribute of the soul. And how can it be deterministic? I mean, if you do wrong things, you know, it is your own choice. Free will. Didn't I say free will? Number of times. Choice. Yes, sir.
I would go back. I'm sorry, I don't know your name.
My name is Dr. Hussain.
Dr. Hussain, I'm Dr. How are you? Okay. I want to go back to your question because I think it is an interesting one. And I think the distinction that is being made between the Semitic, it's quite wrong to the Semitic Indic thing. It's quite better to do Hellenistic. You're dealing with root concepts that probably have some sort of an Indo-European foundation someplace. Those are both Indo-European. But you get very different readings of something very similar if you look at what's going on, say, in Neoplatonism and Gnosis. So you still have a concept, you have it in late Hellenic and Hellenistic migration. Dr. Naval is quite right. I can give you chapter verses in Romans, for example, or in Acts, where St. Paul is doing a variation on the he talks, for example, of Aya. But I think that if you go that route, you're going to begin to find out why the focus in the Hellenistic tradition is more on the return rather than on the reincarnation. And it's a much more mechanistic process. Plotinus in the Aeneid, for example, goes into great detail about the dismissal of the body. And it's not so much because you've been a good boy, but because you've achieved metaphysical understanding. It's that intellectual sort of thing that's very Western, which develops differently somehow. It's a very different intellectual position that develops from a common root.
Shall we make it three more questions or comments?
Any number. So far as I'm concerned.
Actually, I think so.
And let us give it somebody else. Yes?
I was going to ask you, you said about wisdom and suffering. Does the suffering, do you have to the suffering on yourself? Let's say you're a criminal, and instead of you suffering, maybe the concept that I think you're trying to not do, it doesn't have to be maybe a close member of your, maybe your son or your family suffers. Is that within karma? Is it like, does it have to be you that's suffering, or could it be a close one to you that's suffering, that's hurting you?
In one sentence, what's the question?
Well, does the suffering have to be you that's suffering? If you did something that is wrong, committed a crime, could it be your family members who are suffering?
You see, as I said, the karma is of three kinds. One is which is in operation because of the past. The other is what you are creating. Now, when you suffer, now it is maybe because of the past activity that you did. But maybe that you are doing something wrong now, and that wrongdoing is so wrong that it is causing you suffering. Like if I'm a drug addict, I'm on heroin. So I'm causing that suffering to me myself now at this time. And if I'm in a car accident or if I get a disease or something, then according to the theory of karma, it could be the result of what I have been doing in the past, either earlier in this life or in a previous life.
So I have one question. Do animals and plants work in us?
To make this statement, you see, I believe. Now, you will think I'm very crazy. Every atom has favor. So if every atom has free will, but not free will like the human free will suitable to their degree of consciousness. Now if we say that the human degree is like 1 billion, then the awareness of the consciousness of the atom may be like one, number one, as against 1 million. So every atom has life, every atom has spirit, and every atom has the choice of will. Now, in this connection, these earthquakes and famines and fires, who creates them? Well, according to me, they are created by man. They are created by humans. How are they created? There are forces which are called elementals. Every human thought coalesces means joins with one of the elemental forces. And according to the strength of the human thought, that force is there. And when a large number of negative forces have accumulated of a certain kind, then they result in natural cataclysms like earthquakes and fires and so on. Now this is a far out kind of hypothesis. I don't have any proof for it, but
I read a scientific article that said that scientists are having problems because they've noticed that certain particles will behave a certain way when they're observing them, and then another way when they're not being observed.
Quantum physics, quantum mechanics.
So I mean, why would particles behave that way if they?
That's right. So I think you can say that there might be some kind of
Is it possible that here I am on Earth and I'm good, and all the souls that he counted in me 250 million years were good, and I suffer?
I was good. Well, yeah, fine. I mean, according to this theory, however, however much you may rationalize, the fact remains that your suffering comes from your own past deeds.
Something that I would say, and talk more about the questions and answers, but we wanted to really thank the speaker for the program.